Cat Figure Podcast, Episode 10. Before we start, I want to play some shocking audio. This is of my softball coach, Dan. We were walking home from the game. I was recording a conversation about fantasy baseball in case I could use anything on the show. Ignore the last thing I say and hear Dan reveal his true colors. Shocking.
So they vetoed that Altuve trade.
Yeah.
And they're your friends that you're betting with.
Well, no. Well, that's the thing. They're not completely my friends.
I'm not recording. I won't use. I'm not going to use it.
Okay, so there it is. You heard it first. My softball coach is a traitor. He's a backstabber. I know a lot of people in that fantasy league listen. He's a great coach. He's an amazing coach. But there are a lot of people who are really good at what they do who have no integrity.
Yeah, you can't play the game if you're not playing by the rules.
I don't like the way you looked at me when I said there are people who are good at what they do but have no integrity. You know, that implies that I may be good at podcasting but still a selfish human.
I think that's probably correct. But like I said, nobody else is, you know, lining up to take this job, so...
You need ZipRecruiter. So welcome to Cat Figure Podcast. This is episode 10. We're very sorry for the hiatus. There is a whole framus, a whole situation where I had bed bugs in my apartment in Queens, and then my microphones were held hostage by a rent-off between me and my old roommates in a disagreement on how to battle management. Also, my bathroom ceiling caved in which you could see a little skeleton of a bird. So the computers were held up in litigation. Judge Judy awarded them back to me. So now here we are.
Yeah, so let me just spew my personal problems out there too. I was on vacation, so that was my part of the hiatus.
You don't want to go into more explicit, unnecessary detail?
Well, it was just, you know, it was a little bit of your problems, a little bit of my problems, but here we're back. Thank you to the loyal fans who held us accountable, and we'll do our best to entertain you.
Yo, and big ups to my dad for letting us use his studio, a.k.a. his living room, a.k.a. my living room, because I'm staying here in the meantime.
A.k.a. the table.
A.k.a. the dining room table. All right, so word up. So, Tom, a lot's happened since we've last seen each other. Gary Sanchez is a god, this and that, but... Rich Hill had a 7-inning perfect game, and stupid Dave Robertson took him out.
Dave Roberts,
yeah. Who's Robertson, the reliever on the White Sox?
Yeah.
Dave Roberts, who had that big steal in the ALCS, huh?
Mm-hmm.
He had blistering. This is why, like, baseball... This is why, before I liked baseball, I used to laugh that it was the pussiest sport on earth. I think I could say pussy. It's not explicit.
Yeah, I think it's fine.
I mean, cat-like. That is such a pussy sport that you have a blister. Like NFL players, if they're about to reach some, like, milestone that only 20 players have ever done ever, and the equivalent for football would be, like, 2 players because of the number of games, they could have their leg broken and they'd still play. A blister, I mean, I get it because you're a pitcher, but it's still kind of funny.
Yeah, I was really confused by the whole situation. I get all of the counter arguments, including the fact that he has been on the DL. You know, they're trying to win something greater than a perfect game. But the thing that really was bizarre to me was they kept bringing up, well, the training staff was monitoring the blisters in between each inning. And it's like, okay, I mean... At least give him a shot to go out there. Like, you know,
if the pitch count
is going to go up, like, at least say to him, like, you need to get this first batter out, and you're only going to be able to throw, say, 5 pitches. But you can't just not give him that opportunity.
Yo, that's crazy. I understand, like, so in the most theoretical, like, in the most, like, on paper, this is your job for Dave Roberts. I get it because it's like the most hardcore strict interpretation is like my job is to only win a championship no matter what. I don't care about any personal stuff. But even if you want to look at it from the most like, if you want to look at it, like, that's 100% his goal. He cares about nothing else except winning a championship. Even if you look at it like that, it may be harmful because other players are going to be maybe pissed at him, like, cranky at him or lose some respect or question it, including Rich Hill, right? So even in the most strict interpretation of your job, it may not be a good look.
Yeah, it's not a good look at all because, you know, as much as we like to think these players are like robots and can compartmentalize everything, you know, there has to be like an inherent trust factor as, you know, a player with a manager hoping that the manager has like your best interests at heart. And
that's why they do trust falls in spring training from a cliff.
But they only do that in the Arizona.
They dropped Bartolo Colon. They couldn't hold him.
Uh-oh. They must have had a trampoline underneath. But, you know, the Dodgers at that point when they took him out were up 5-0 as well. I could see if it was a 1-0 game or a 2-0 game where you have a legitimate concern about, you know, giving up a lead. But
how do you know? But, I mean, but that, it, yeah. That doesn't even make sense if he's pitching a perfect game in a close game. I don't know. I mean, but then again, I think it's ridiculous, but, like, what's it worth? You know, like what's it worth? Like, Johan Santana ruined everything, but Mets fans, including me, but not really, but a lot of my friends, were just so excited to have the first no-hitter, not even a perfect game, like, but the first
weak.
No-hitter ever. And in hindsight, they wish they didn't do that. They wish they didn't push him.
Yeah,
like, management is probably happy. Like, what the hell do I care if I'm Dodgers ownership if a guy got a perfect game or not, right?
Well, I think that
maybe
it's
if he's
hard
a homegrown
to...
player, it's, like, a little more of a sentimental, nice, like, achievement, right?
Well, he's not even a homegrown player because they...
No, I know. I'm saying maybe, like, I'm thinking of some scenario where as an owner you give a crap if they do the perfect game or not. But
well,
mostly if I'm an owner, all I care about, obviously, is making money and exploiting as many people as I can,
well,
and cheating on my wife, you know, those things.
I don't necessarily agree with you on that. I think as an owner, it would be hard to put a dollar amount on it, but there are, you know, you're going to get an increased exposure, and that builds, you know, the value of your, you know, team brand, but it's not in any way, like, you know, a significant enough amount of money, but... You know, they do market stuff, you know, perfect games.
Yeah, I guess then there's memorabilia. Who knows? Right, it's a very vague money amount that it's worth or not, right? You mean?
Yeah, it's just,
it's a bad look. Say his blister, which, again, it's such a pussy injury. It's funny. It's comical almost. But say his ingrown nail or say his paper cut got so bad that it, like, ruined the offseason. Then again, it's like, if you're the owner... And this dude, you trade for this guy. He hasn't even been able to pitch until recently, right?
Yeah.
And then if for one perfect game that you don't even really need, even though you kind of do, but whatever, that you're going to win anyway, it's like I would be happy with him taking him out. But like I said, if I'm any player, who cares? This is stupid. Who gives a crap? I mean, perfect games are so rare, but... If it was something crappier, I wouldn't give a crap. I'm very articulate today. I'm sorry.
Perfect game that really sticks out in my mind, other than the David Wells perfect game that I was at, is the one where that guy, I think his name was Andres Galarraga, when he got just absolutely robbed by the
Jim
official.
Joyce. Yeah, the last out of the game.
And, you know, thinking about that.
It was a play at first, for those who don't know. He was one out away from a perfect game. And the first base ump called the guy safe. And he was out by a whole step. And the first base ump was crying in the press conference after the game. And he was so close. It was really sad for everybody.
Yeah, and, you know, thinking about the game, I should have looked up exactly how long ago that was. But we had a time when there was not instant replay as part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
How, you know.
Oh, that just this reminded you of that, you mean?
Yeah, and it makes me think, you know.
Oh, God, yeah, imagine. I know, that is crazy to think about.
I've been watching a lot of games recently, and when I first heard the idea of a robot umpire that calls strikes within the strike zone from a camera, I thought it was, you know, a little bit ridiculous and out of line. But the more I've been watching games recently, you know, I think it would be really foolish for them not to implement this at some time soon.
Dude, I totally agree. I mean, you had the same, I remember you saying, like, oh, you're taking human element out of it, which I get. It's like a rhetorical old man argument to some extent, but I get it because it's the same. It's coming from the same place as, like, LeBron has to go to college before going to the draft for experience. It's like the same old man in my head saying that. But yeah, no, there's no reason to not want to get it right. You know, when we play the show, you and I debate, I'm like, why not set the strike zone to perfect when you're playing the game, the video game, the show? Tom and I would play a lot, and you like it where it's variable. You think it's like makes it fun and interesting.
I mean, I
want
still,
a perfect strike zone because I have a perfect eye, and I don't want to jeopardize that.
I still shut you out anyway.
Yeah, but no, but not. It's because of that. Now, if we agree on the strike zone, then.
But you know, even with that, the umpires then they can pay attention to stuff that they're blatantly missing calls on right now, which are check swings. Did the foul ball get tipped? Did the ball hit the batter? You know, like a lot of these things are just being missed by umpires, and I know that they're trained and they're probably the best able of any human beings to be umpires, but you know, it's hurting the game.
Yo,
in my
one
opinion.
one strike and one at bat changes an entire game. Like there was that playoff game 2 years ago where Matt Kemp, or 3 years ago, when the Dodgers and Kershaw blew another game in St. Louis, I believe, like Kershaw had a bad Kershaw start, and there was an at-bat where a ball, like on the pitch tracks thing, pitch number 4 and pitch number 6, you couldn't see pitch
same
4
spot.
Because 6 was literally covering it entirely, and one was called a ball and one was called a strike. And like, you know, that, I mean, that sucks. That's so frustrating. Or you see like a pitch that's like at the knees, which is my biggest beef with the strike zone currently, is that it's so low. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
They call strikes at the knees, and then you see players hit home runs, strikes above the zone, right?
Yeah.
The strike zone needs to move up, I think, but
I agree.
It's funny that, like you see one player get a call at the knees, a called strike that screws up the whole at bat. Then they golf for the next one and then they're out. But, they were pointing out on the Effectively Wild podcast that without robot umps, there isn't a objective strike zone theoretically, right? Like there is no
right
setup one. There's no template, right, where it's like it has to be this. Maybe there's a guideline, but in reality, I should say, in practice, there's no existing strike zone. So it's funny to have pitch FX on the screen because that's like off of what? If they're not, it's like that's based off of no real
right
thing. It's just like what we estimate should be it be.
And thinking about it, even just from a totally practical standpoint, let's say that there's two batters and one is very tall in stature and the other batter is much shorter.
In stature?
Yes, in stature.
Okay.
The umpire behind the plate, you know, the perception of the strike zone for the two different batters because of their, you know, difference in height, you're not going to be able to give the same, you know, objective strike zone to one batter.
Yo, you know,
they
had a midget in like the 1920s, a midget got one at bat and he walked in four balls.
Yeah, I saw they had a little cutout of him.
Oh,
at Cooperstown.
That's messed up, a little cutout.
They had a little cutout of him in Cooperstown.
It likes to be called a little person cutout, not a little cutout.
A small cutout,
a midget cutout. They did,
yeah. And
to
then
scale,
yeah. And then they had it next to like Randy Johnson.
That's cool. Wait, why did they not let that guy come back?
I think they signed him for like one game, and then I don't really know.
That's like
what
the Rudy
reason
of baseball. That's pretty cool. If you could walk every at bat, yeah, I would make my character small for a little strike zone in the show. But. Like, I also, obviously, all the power possible that the umps have is going to not want to lose jobs and lose responsibility, because then they're going to need one less person, potentially. It's like, okay, home plate ump, you could also watch this now. I don't know. So the labor, the union labor.
Yeah, I don't care about that.
Thugging
because
me. I don't care about that. We're talking as fans.
It's like 100 umpires, maybe, and yeah, you know.
No,
it'll sure
really hurt the economy,
them,
Tom.
As people, but you're screwing a lot of things up for a lot of other people.
It'll hurt the economy, Tom.
So
you can't lose those jobs.
Other things I was thinking about in terms of helping the game of baseball move forward into, you know, the age of millennials. let's kick around some ideas.
Look at who's hosting now. I like this. All right, I'll be the expert. Go.
One of the things I was thinking about, and, you know, I don't have I do. I have a practical solution. One thing, and these are both to speed up the game. A, the batter should not be allowed to leave the batter's box.
Yeah, they need to enforce that. I mean, you mean even when they swing? Because right now they're not supposed to leave after they take a pitch, but they do let them sometimes.
You get one timeout per at-bat if you need to step out. And other than that, no. If you swing, just the batter's box is so big.
You know what would help is if Nike made better Velcro on their batting gloves. And I think all these players wouldn't have to readjust them so many times.
You're right. Under Armour is working on that, so Nike's done.
I'm joking anyway. But
and then the other thing is they absolutely have to put some sort of numerical limit on the amount of times that a catcher can walk out to the mound, because
yes.
I saw Gary Sanchez.
So annoying.
He clearly couldn't communicate with, I forget which pitcher it was, like they just were not able to communicate, and he literally would walk out to the mound.
Yeah,
on
you need
every
to get penalized for that. There should be a penalty for it. It should be the same as the manager visiting the mound. Like they have a rule for that. It's that's a way good one. I mean, they're both good. It's just the only problem is they have the batter box rule, and they don't really enforce it all the time. They kind of do, because players, when they take a pitch, keep one foot in and step out, rearrange their junk, and then, you know, touch their balls, all that stuff, and then they come back. But
I think the robot umpire could help with this, too. You know, you set a timer after the last pitch was caught by the catcher and say, like, 10 seconds, and once that you know, green light or whatever goes on,
the pitcher can pitch the ball.
Yeah,
I hate it. I think it's so corny when these old veterans get mad when somebody like Johnny Cueto or maybe Hansel Robles, some Mets reliever, did it a couple times last year. The guy wears the helmet, I think.
Robles.
Yeah, he quick pitched, quote unquote. But there should be no such thing.
That's not a quick pitch.
That's just like messing with your timing.
You're ready to go. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And but all the almost every like ex hitter on TV would say that it's like not in the spirit of the game, but screw you. The spirit of the game is whatever's most entertaining for us, chuckles, because you don't have a job without us being entertained. Chuckles.
Yeah, I mean, you know, thinking just from a very high-level perspective.
Oh, is that what you're thinking from? I didn't know that.
Yeah, exactly. the CEO level point of view, you know, football is just a lot more entertaining to watch, I would say, to the average viewer, because baseball really, on television, I think these particular things are really killing the game, because it gets so slow. And then when you get into the later innings, when you're able to, especially with the 40-man roster now, you can bring in a left-handed pitcher, then a right-handed, left, right. I mean, Girardi does it, Brock Showalter.
I think that Brock is good. Well, coming from a low-level perspective, coming from the everyman perspective, right? This is our marketing ploy, like how ESPN is like, Greeny and Golic are so different, the yin and the yang. Anyway, but, like, I think that baseball is not as much about speed, because football games take longer almost now on average. But there's not – when it's all strikeouts, like, and when there's that many strikeouts and walks, it's so boring. Whatever they can do to put more balls in play, games are so much more fun when – a lot of balls are put in play, in my opinion. Also, that, in effect, makes it go faster. But would you make the strike zone bigger or smaller to have more balls put in play? Because if it's smaller, then pitchers could take more. But then the pitchers have to pound the zone that's easier to crush more often. Like, you know, if there's more balls put in play, that means the counts probably aren't going as deep. But how do you do that as far as the strike zone?
Well, I think that when you mentioned it before, I think it would be a great solution is to just move the strike zone up, because the pitches that really, you know, if you can pitch low in the zone, which is what they teach pretty much every pitcher at every single level of baseball, those are the pitches, you know, if you're a batter, you can't tell the difference between a low fastball and a low changeup, you know, at your knee level, until it's too late, and you're definitely going to strike out on those pitches. So you know, yeah, it would hurt the pitching statistics, but just move the zone up because, you know, technically what's considered a ball above the zone is a pitch that you could probably hit.
You see a lot of people hit. You see them hit them for home runs a lot. And balls that are at the knees that are not hittable really go for strikes. So if you moved it up, let's think this through. I'm going to think this through out loud. So you move the strike zone up, then the pitchers maybe can't adjust, and so they're walking more. I guess players on base makes it more exciting, but is there any way to – I guess you can't really enforce with rules. You can't rule out a way to have less strikeouts, which I think is the biggest culprit to balls being not put in play, right? Like, because players are throwing harder and sabermetrics are realizing that a strikeout is not that horrible in and of itself, right? Is there a way to enforce that out, enforce less strikeouts?
I don't think there's any specific way where you can say, you know, we're going to try to put more balls in play. But
what if
I think
the robot umpire tased, like a little pepper spray or taser comes out if you strike out?
Do you get a warning first?
Yeah, of course. Two strikes is your warning.
Okay, what happens if you strike out twice?
Then you get a cattle prod. It's even worse.
You get branded.
Then three strikes, you get it up your butt. No, that's rape. Whatever. That will slow down the game way too much.
Dinner with Joe West.
I don't get it, but I'm sure some of our more high level listeners get it. So what else would you do to improve baseball, bro?
Yeah, another thing I was sort of thinking about is.
Boring.
They should really have teams within their divisions. Like, there should be more division games played as opposed to playing every single team.
Yeah.
You know, I think, like, the whole allure of interleague play has really died off.
Well, there's an odd number of teams in each league, so there has to be at least one per series. But that doesn't mean you can't do what you're saying. You're right. I agree. I think... But then again, are you willing to sacrifice Mets Yankees? Like, that's fun every year.
Yeah, I mean, you could just have it every other year because, you know, those are the outliers and not the norms.
I agree with you, though.
I don't really care about the White Sox and the Brewers,
Right. I agree. In general, like, I think all sports is more fun when there's division rivalries. Well, that's why them making the two wild card and making winning your division worth more really makes it a lot more fun as far as, like, I hate the Marlins. I look for them to lose. I know their team pretty much better than I did a couple years ago. I didn't care as much, for example, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, or the Phillies, when the Mets and Phillies were both good. If you could get a wild card, it doesn't really make a difference. But then again, it's like then – no. I think just the more the divisions – the better it is. But this is, again, now to your point, the more different the divisions are, we both agree is good, right? That they're the more unique and less cookie cutter everything is, the better, I think, for sure. I think this is one of the things I don't like about the NFL as the years go on, is that almost every franchise is less and less distinguishable from other franchises. Like, there's almost too much parity to me. Like, some have their own, like, trademarks, obviously, like the Steelers and Patriots and Packers. But then, like, you know, the
Jaguars.
The Jaguars and the Bucks and the like Titans, they're all interchangeable to me. Like, besides their city, they happen to have a good young, like I don't know. There's not as much uniqueness. Like, I wish one division in football had five teams. Even that would be exciting. I mean, there's no way to do that, but like, there's something very fun about baseball, and it may be just the sport itself lends itself to being able to have very uniquely built teams. Like, they're very differently built. But that's something I like. So I think that people who talk about having the DH in both or not in both are mutts. Like, I love having the leagues be different. It makes it so much more interesting to talk about and so much more interesting to analyze. So, you know, it's I love it. I would never, ever want them to unify it either way.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a separate issue from interleague play, though. You know, I think that all of those things are inherent in baseball, the DH, no DH in one league, one division having more teams than another.
I don't think those are inherent. I think they're just...
But the big thing is these interleague games, right? Any game that you have where you build more of these rivalries, like, it doesn't matter what two teams are in the division. If you play each other more, I think it just inherently becomes, you pay attention to it more. The rivalries start to grow. And I think that the interleague, sort of model has kind of, died out. And I'd rather teams be playing directly against the competition that they're trying to beat out.
But
for
don't
playoff
they play
spots.
A lot? How many interleague games does each team play a year? Like, you still play each team in your division like 14 times.
Yeah, but I still don't think that's enough. I mean, would if you're, say, the Mets, I would want them playing the Nationals to see who the best team is to win the division. I'd rather them play 30 times.
Yeah, well, there's 20 interleague games each year per team since 2013. So I guess you just could split it up like five per team other in your division, right? Is that what you would do? Add five more?
Yeah.
With those 20. Well, minus maybe, how they have the natural city rival for each, like the Cubs and White Sox, Mets, Yankees.
Right.
So maybe you put like three or four per team in your division extra. And then, I'm with you more on the other ones. I don't know how with you I am on this, but I am a little bit with you because you're my man. I'll never fully not be with you. I'm the type of person that, I'm kind of with your ideas as commissioner, but, I'm not going to backstab you like my boy Tomeo because, he a ass beep. I'm not going to do that to you, but whatever.
Appreciate that, bro. Appreciate that.
All right, so...
One other thing
All right, let's get to it.
It would kind of be hard to work on logistically, and it would hurt probably the ratings of the one game wild card, but I really think that if you made the wild card one game into a three game series, I think that would, one, place a greater emphasis on winning your division because the advantage becomes so much more.
Wait, what?
Turning the one game wild card into a three game series.
That makes it less important to win your division.
No, it doesn't, because then whoever wins the wild card, they're already either two or three deep into their rotation.
I was thinking it makes it more fair, and therefore it's not like, a crapshoot, but it's the same thing. It's like, and you're playing extra games. I get it. You know what I mean? Like, my first thought was like that all the wild card teams would like that, like to have more of a chance to prove themselves, but they don't want to play three. Yeah. It reduces the variance, but still makes it the same advantage, just more because you're having to exert yourself those extra. Yeah, I get
and
you.
And the bullpen gets worked, and then you have
more,
to travel.
Yeah, and it's more fair for the real team. Like, it's more fair for the wild card teams. That sucks to be you and have the Astros beat you in one game, or you happen to face a lefty and whatever.
Yeah, and you could do this over one weekend, and I'm sure that the teams that win the division would gladly take a weekend off to rest their players.
And it might make the playoffs better, or the end of the season better, because then teams don't have to think about their
shuffling the lineups.
Shuffling the stuff and giving days off. It could give them a real set. But then again, people are like, we don't finish until November. It's too late. I don't know. Players are willing to
shave two games off the regular season.
All the players would do that. But obviously the owners are never going to want to get rid of one gate per year. They wouldn't. I mean, they just won't, because it doesn't equal out. What would it be? Maybe two or one playoff games for two more teams does not equal 15 lost gates, but whatever. But the players, if there were any way to do it, I know that most of the players, they say, would snap their fingers and take a little pay cut and play less games every year because they're tired.
Absolutely. I mean, 162 is not a joke.
What? I couldn't believe it. When I was a little kid and my dad explained to me how many football games there were a season, and then he was and then told me how many baseball games there were per season, I thought he was kidding. I thought he was just, making stuff up, but
It's the truth.
You know, it also makes you realize this is a very basic level understanding. And again, as a low level thinker, I feel like no matter how well you hear the numbers for football are, that's only so many games per year. Like 10 baseball game ratings equals one football game rating, right? As far as money. So baseball, any one game will never be as popular as any NFL game, but it doesn't need to be to make the same amount of money. Because, I feel like that baseball is getting less popular, and yet they say it's making more money. It doesn't matter because there's so many gates and so many games on TV. It's 10 to 1.
Yeah, and from the business perspective, baseball has done a great job with MLB Media, so they're making enough money.
All right, yo, so we got, only 10 minutes left. Let's look at the wild cards. If the playoffs ended today. If the playoffs ended today, the Mets would win the World Series. Go. No, I'm kidding. If the playoffs ended today, the Mets are now in. And the Yankees are out. The Yankees are an old, uninteresting team. No, Detroit is one game ahead of them.
Yeah, the Yankees are two out of the second wild card right now. They have Detroit ahead of them. And if the season were to end today, Toronto would be the first wild card and Baltimore would be the second. The Yankees are two back from Baltimore.
Don't you get to play Baltimore? I think you get to play Baltimore coming up.
Definitely. There's one series left. I think the Yankees also...
You play the Red Sox.
Play the Red Sox and...
play the Blue Jays.
Yeah, and a nice series against the Rays is sandwiched in between there. So, look, this is what I was kind of trying to get at, too, with making more division games. These are the real games at the end of the season because even though the Yankees are two back, every single game that they play against a division rival becomes just that much more important.
Yeah, I'm a little pissed the Mets play the Twins coming up. They start a series this Friday.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, I'm happy that we get those free wins, but I wish we could make up ground. I wish we could play the Marlins. Were you being sarcastic that I'm sure I'm pissed? Or you being serious?
Yeah, I was being sarcastic because the Twins are abysmal.
Are they? No, I'm kidding. I know that. So let's see who's just out. Let's see. The Tigers, who came out of... Seattle is 2.5 games out.
Yep.
Wow, bro. And the and Miami, it's really just a three-team race, basically, for two spots in the NL between the Giants, Mets, and Cardinals. Miami is 5 games out, and Pittsburgh 6 games out. So series, the Mets, when we beat them 3 out of 4, and Yoenis, who is so clutch, almost all of his home runs are relevant and really change games. He's awesome. He is not at all. He's the opposite of A-Rod's garbage time homers or something. He is so clutch. But if that exists, whatever. But beating 3 out of 4 in that game when Jose Fernandez started, and then in the 10th inning, Yoenis hit a walk-off homer, helped so much to bury them. They were ahead of the Mets for a while. So, obviously it's going to be the Mets and the Giants because St. Louis is a horrible franchise who's done nothing over the last 20 years. They can't farm teams, right?
Yeah.
You said yeah?
Yeah. I'm definitely being sarcastic there.
Okay, good.
The NL races...
I don't like that being against the Giants and Cardinals, obviously.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, but I think that it'll end up being the Giants against the Mets, which should be an interesting matchup to see Mad Bum versus Syndergaard at AT&T Park. I really hope that is the matchup as well.
Okay, and I'm going to tell you right now, the Mariners are going to beat the Orioles, and the Mariners are going to win the World Series. Hot take.
I think you may be the only person who will predict that the Mariners will win the World Series in anywhere out of anybody who talks anything about baseball. You might be the only person to pick
in all the amateur every podcast ever. How's Cleveland still doing? They're still killing it, huh?
Yeah,
that's crazy, dude.
Cleveland, but I believe that Danny Salazar just went on the DL. But their pitching staff is so deep. They're six up on Detroit in their division. So, you know, Cleveland's there, and they're not very far behind the Rangers for what would be home field advantage throughout the playoffs.
So the Mariners are actually behind the Royals and the Astros as far as odds to win the World Series, and yet they're ahead of them in the standings. No respect.
Yeah, Seattle, I think, has run off either five or six in a row.
It's crazy that they're, I mean, a year ago, remember, everybody was picking them. They were supposed to be awesome last year. It was like, oh, Nelson Cruz is the perfect addition. They have Cano in his prime, and their pitching, people thought was good. I mean, but now King Felix is pretty whack.
Yeah, it's a team that when you stack up, you know, the rosters of one team against the other, when you look at it on paper, it's a team that has a lot to be excited about. But, you know, those stars that they have so much money tied up in, like you said, King Felix is no longer an ace. Their bullpen is shaky at best. So they have those holes in, you know, on the team, but the good news for Seattle is none of these teams in the AL wild card race, including Baltimore, Detroit, or the Yankees, have really, you know, gone on the kind of run that Seattle has over the past week. So if you're going from a momentum perspective, Seattle does have a shot.
Who is who's the rookie of the years?
Wow. So in the AL, I would say it still has to go to Michael Fulmer.
Mm-hmm.
If Gary Sanchez were somehow able to keep up the pace that he had been on a couple of weeks ago, you could definitely make a case for him because...
Keep up the pace that he had been on. That
right.
implies the pace is already over.
Well, he had dropped off a little bit because you can't hit, you know, 400 with a home run every other game.
Says who? You tell me I can't do it, and I'll show you a way. You don't know me.
Gary Pablo Sanchez.
So Michael Fulmer, and who? Any third candidate in the AL, or just between those two, really?
I would say maybe Nomar Mazara.
And then in the NL, Corey Seager, obviously.
Yeah, it's got
to
be.
It
Corey
has to
Seager.
Be. He's too awesome. You know, it's actually surprising that he ain't got more love for how amazing he's been. Even though this is like a rhetorical love underrated conversation, he is so good. Is
Corey
he? He's Jewish.
I don't know.
We need to find that out ASAP because
Corey
Kyle. I need to know if I can root for them or not.
Well, his brother Kyle.
Kyle Seager.
Well, we'll see. I was thinking about this. Why don't they have a rookie of the year for a position player and a pitcher?
Yeah.
Because it's very difficult to compare, you know, the impact of a pitcher versus a position player.
If only there was a stat that, like, accumulated all these things and showed how many wins above, like, a replacement-level player you were worth.
Yeah.
If only they could create something like that. No, but I get what you're saying. There are a bunch of awards that we just don't know what they are. Like, every position gets an award. But, yeah, rookies are their own jump off. All right. So, you know, that's it. We're a little rusty. We were good. I give us a C+ this episode, C- this episode.
Nobody wants to hear your review.
But we'll get back on it. All right. So I'll do another episode. So, you can find me on SoundCloud for the Cap Figure Podcast post-episode review every week. Episode 1, I have a special guest, Tom, and we'll be over there. All right, for the Cap Figure Podcast, please subscribe. Please just review, even if you didn't like it. Just review. We need reviews.
On iTunes.
If it's already on your iPhone, use Chisel. Sizzle Chest. Bye.
Try to be best, because you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you gotta hang tough to make it.